Hello everyone, and welcome back to not only another day here at the Damage Report, but the day, Wednesday, as we call it here, Big News Wednesdays. And J.R. Jackson, I think we can all agree, today, pretty big news Wednesday. What do you think?
I think so. Listen, I'm always concerned about these things panning out correctly, as you can tell. And I think today we got it. I think today we got it. You know, we got things happening. We got things, people flip-flopping, changing positions, voting, passing something, not passing something, showing opposition. This is wonderful for all of us political wonk nerds. Yeah, it's awesome. Mm-hmm.
We've got suspense. Donald Trump tells the GOP to do something. Will they do it? Stay tuned to find out. You don't know. It's a 50-50 coin flip. Anyway, but we have not only big news, we also have a big rundown. We have too much news, which is very often the case, very much the case today. So we're going to try to get through everything we can, including the back and forth on whether there's going to be this commission that looks into January 6th. We will see about that. Things are moving fast in that area. We've got updates on Israel-Palestine. What is Biden saying? And who is he saying it to? And what of it is public? And what's more important than that? What some representatives are doing. So we'll have that in just a little bit. Katie Porter being awesome and the Trump Organization facing a criminal investigation. So that'll all be fun. And then later on today, joined on the show in an interview, not live, mind you, but Ken Klippenstein, which should be a lot of fun. That will be probably going up on the channel over the weekend, but our YouTube members get access to it the day of. I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying it is available. So we love our members.
What's Kenny Clips his demands for being called back to the show now that he's big time?
I don't know. I let the team handle that. I'm assuming there are a lot of riders, specific colors of candies, hotel rooms and all that, which is weird because like he's not even in LA, but he does want the hotel rooms. What he does in there, we don't ask. But he can't go to the same hotel twice. I'll just say that. He gets banned hotel after hotel. Anyway, so that'll be coming up a little bit later on. But all of you, regardless of what platform you're on, thank you for being here. Appreciate you. Appreciate you, Travis Simpkins, becoming a tier one member over on YouTube. Thank you for that. And yeah, so, oh, by the way, big heads up on a few things. So just get you your appetite whetted for later on this week. I'm gonna be joining Anna Kasparian as I always do for the second hour of the Young Turks later on today. Also tomorrow, I'm gonna be leading the first and the second hour of the Young Turks. So very exciting. But before that on Thursday, we're gonna be doing our monthly live Q&A for our tier three YouTube members. So that is gonna be available. We have got a post up on the community tab and we made it into a bit of a game. You go to the community tab, and then you scroll and you try to find the post. But if you can, you can post questions for the Q&A later on. So that'll be fun. And no, we always have fun every month chit-chatting about different stuff. So anyway, we got a lot of news we're gonna get to. I can see comments and super chats already rolling in. So we will be talking about those in just a little bit. But before all of that, let's cover one of the big news stories of the day. What happened in DC on January 6th was bad. Okay, I just want to state that because it's become like this controversial thing to say that a huge mob storming the Capitol and trying to kill Mike Pence and maybe Nancy Pelosi and trying to overturn the election is a bad thing. We were pretty unified on the 6th and 7th about that, but not so much now. And even an investigation by Congress into what happened is now looking like it might not happen. And I think in part that is due to the effect of Fox News and Donald Trump, as so many of the bad things in America are. So you had had previously a lot of Republicans that seemed to be willing to sign on to this agreement that was come to between Democrats and Republicans. There was this negotiation on what the commission would look like, and it was looking like we were sailing towards having it. Now, not so much, and not coincidentally, after the guy who led the insurrection said this, Republicans in the House and Senate should not approve the Democrat trap of the January 6th commission. It's not even what it's called. It is just more partisan unfairness. And unless the murders, riots, and firebombings in Portland, Minneapolis, Seattle, Chicago, and New York are also going to be studied, this discussion should be ended immediately. Republicans must get much tougher and much smarter and stop being used by the radical left. Hopefully Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy are listening. Well, I mean, when you put it so eloquently, but yeah, no, apparently JR They were listening, with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell telling his fellow Republicans during a closed door caucus lunch on Tuesday that he can't support it in its current form. Prominent concern that was raised at this lunch was that it could be used to weaponize to subpoena members. You know, like if they might have aided the insurrection. We wouldn't want that. No, it's not that we wouldn't want them to aid the insurrection. We wouldn't want them to be investigated for it. There's also concerns that it might alienate members of the GOP base, as well as former President Trump, who was impeached for inciting the riot. Alternatively, they recognize that if any investigation is going to take place, it's better to have a hand in investigating it than to allow Democrats to be fully in control. So there's certainly more and more of the Republicans responding to what Trump said. But JR, what do you think about this?
Well, first of all, starting right at the top with Trump's statement and his marching orders for his Republicans to do what he tells them to do as he's out of power and out of office. Let's keep reminding everyone of that. So he starts up with the Democrat trap of the January 6th commission. So if it's a trap, what could they be trapping you in doing? I thought everything was on the up and up. I thought everything was perfect. I always hear about, this goes way back to Bush days, even before that. If you're not guilty of any crimes, what are you afraid of? Why can't you testify? Why can't you talk about what happened? Why can't you talk about what was said between you and Kevin McCarthy on that day too? If you can't talk about all those things because it's a trap, what would that trap result in? Culpability, convictions, charges, things like that maybe? I don't know. Maybe discovering exactly who was a part of it and how they were part of it and how elected officials allow it to continue to happen. Yeah. Specifically you, elected official Donald Trump at the time, no longer elected official. So first off, there's that trap. So he automatically points out that, hey, you guys, we're in trouble and we have to continue to avoid it. And also this insertion of Republicans being a part of the commission so they can help with the investigation or be a part of the investigation. In other words, to derail it, to make sure we throw in some wrenches into the system to make sure this doesn't go smoothly. There's no way there's anything about this that they've said before that would allow anyone to believe they have any interest in investigating what happened on January 6th. Mm-hmm. They know what happened on January 6th. They don't want everyone else to know what happened on January 6th.
That is true. That is definitely true. And look, to some extent, I'm mad about the way this is being discussed. Even, I guess, kind of the way I've presented it. Sort of. I mean, we're gonna quickly move past that. But this is like, the Republicans are against this bipartisan commission. Will there be a commission? Will the Republican concerns win out? That's all BS, because they're the ones that did it. What does Trump think about an investigation into the riot he started? Like, imagine if I went and I found a 7-Eleven and I smeared poop all over it. And then I released a video of me kind of covered in poop saying, I don't know who did this, but I'm sure they're great patriots, a little bit smelly, but I'm sure that they're great. And then like cops were sort of looking into it and they're considering booking me. And I put out like a TikTok saying, come on cops, be smart, be strong, hands off me, I'm a little bit poopy. Who would care what my opinion was? I did the thing. And just like, and if members of the Dragon Squad were like, well, no, I don't think you should really look into what John did. Well, yes, there's a bias there clearly because crimes were committed. You guys tried to overthrow the election. And that is, and the fact that you failed is used as a defense by your side constantly. Tucker Carlson loves to joke that it was just some people with debt. And there's a guy in a Chewbacca costume. Yeah, you guys tried to overthrow it and you suck at it. You couldn't get enough people and you couldn't get it done. But rest assured that if they had had three times as many people, if more of the people had brought guns and bombs, which some of them did, and they had succeeded, then what would Tucker Carlson be in a bunker saying, I've had to turn against the Republicans because they've gone down a dark road? No, you guys just failed, and your failure is not a defense against investigation, or at least it shouldn't be.
I want to remind everyone, in case we forgot, because no one's forgotten, but just be connected to every time they try to make a new excuse. Remember when it was Antifa and BLM people who were actually dressed as MAGA running into the Capitol? I remember that excuse. I remember that excuse. Okay. So if it wasn't MAGA, but if it was actually BLM and Antifa, shouldn't you be open to investigating to find and uncover who these radicals are? These leftists that posed as MAGA to run into the Capitol? Everyone should be open to this January 6th commission because we're gonna expose the lie about who was actually there, because you guys told us that it was actually someone else. Did we forget that part?
No, and like not only did the Antifa, the radical BLM terrorists, not only did they do this, But they did this while smearing, not poop this time, but smearing the good name of Donald Trump with all those flags. We need to look into it. Man, it is amazing. Like, for these people who have like no mental capabilities whatsoever, the sheer like spontaneous mental flexibility around January 6th, that depending on literally second to second, diving back and forth, it was Antifa, so it was bad and they're awful and they're the worst. Or, oh wait, no, the whole thing wasn't a problem at all, literally not at all. And then we're gonna get to Marjorie Greene's speech in a bit. Her back and forth on whether there needs to be an investigation in the same exact like stream of consciousness. It is the only mental flexibility I've seen from them. But really fast, I wanna make sure that you understand that it wasn't just Mitch McConnell who's bowing down to what Donald Trump was demanding. And by the way, we had a video that we were gonna play of Mitch McConnell implying that he was undecided. No, this morning he just came out and said that he was against it. So that's done, that's cool. Yeah. But you also have, let's see, Kevin McCarthy saying that he's opposed to it. This discussion should be ended immediately, he says. He said Trump was to blame right after. And then he went to Mar-a-Lago and suddenly the story starts to change. So it might still happen, maybe, I don't know. I don't know if there's any Republicans in the Senate that are gonna go for it. Supposedly there are a couple dozen Republicans in the House that are still expected to vote for it. But we'll see. It's certainly looking a lot less likely than it was just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, Mar-a-Lago is the Bermuda Triangle of hypocrisy. You can think one thing, but as soon as you cross into those doors, you've gone into this fog and no one ever sees that part of your brain again. It's missing and you come back with what Donald Trump has inserted into your brain, which is the exact opposite of what you believed before. It happened to Kevin McCarthy. It's happened multiple times to Lindsey Graham. We already know that. But once you cross into those doors, suddenly all of your thoughts and beliefs and principles are gone.
Yeah, 100%.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
In advance of so many of the Republicans turning against an investigation into January 6th, here is what Marjorie Greene had to say about it.
The question that comes to mind is this: what about all the riots that happened during the summer of 2020 after the death of George Floyd? Studies show 570 protests in 220 US locations turned violent over the summer. Are those not insurrections? Indeed, we should have a commission to study the violent BLM and Antifa mobs that have plagued American cities this past summer. And that's for the American people who, by the way, pay the taxes that fund everything we do here. Also, we should have a security supplemental to fund all the police departments that have been defunded due to the pressure from radical, violent, and socialist groups. We should back the blue because they certainly back us. Also, while it's catch and release for domestic terrorists, Antifa, BLM, the people who breached the Capitol on January 6th are being abused, some even being held for 23 hours a day in solitary confinement.
Okay, there's a few issues there. I love that she just, like, we often say that their speeches are just rattling off buzzwords, but when she says radical Antifa, domestic terrorists, BLM, she just says the words in a row. She doesn't, like, she doesn't apply any grammar to it or punctuation. It's like her brain like ticks and she just spits out a couple of the things she thinks are bad in the world. But anyway, there she is saying basically we shouldn't have this investigation, but we should investigate all the protests, as she says, and she lists all the damage that they did. So look, I have more thoughts about this, but JR, what do you think?
Well, it's obvious, as you pointed out. I actually did notice that the way she was reading, like a second grader or maybe fourth grader who's uninterested in his book report. Mm-hmm. Antifa, BLM, So,
is that not an insurrection?
It just goes to show. I mean, I guess you can get somewhere even though you didn't get past your sixth grade education. But, anyways, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be insulting folks like this. This is the approach now to make sure that we point out what happened in the summertime. By the way, what are you investigating for the summertime? What are you investigating? What's the commission on the summertime protests and riots that happened?
She doesn't know, JR. You think she thought it through that much?
What are we trying to uncover? Oh, and I don't know. Maybe I missed it. This is in all honesty. This is not to make a point. Maybe I missed when Republicans were asking for some kind of commission to investigate last summer's protests that led to some riots and all that stuff. Were they previously trying to do that before the January 6th commission was brought up? I'm just curious. Or maybe they just brought up just now because really shows exactly how much they care about what happened last summer and investigating it. What are you going to investigate? What do you need to uncover? You need to find out why it happened. Hey, black folks and folks that supported the whole movement, hey, they already told you why the protests happened, because we got indiscriminate cop killings and then we have the justice system allowing them off every time. What's to investigate? Hey, you want to investigate it? We'll sit down and testify and tell you what happened. You can watch all the videos of black folks getting murdered in the streets, and that's more testimony. If you really want to go through all this, it's going to make you look bad all over again to tell us why there was protest last summer that was joined by so many other people that usually weren't a part of it. If for sure, investigate it. Investigate it. But do that separately and make yourself look bad there.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing is just, I'm going to say it's whataboutism, but you need to understand that. The very beginning, like her first word was, what about? What about Portland? What about Seattle? What about all? She said, what about over and over and over again because she knows that she wants to what about it, but she doesn't get that people are sort of clued into that and she needs to mask it a little bit. So she just like spits it out again over and over and over. She makes that stupid line about the people that, by the way, their taxes pay. It's like, and I marked this in the run, it's the ultimate dumb person thing to say. Like, and there's such a gap between understanding something and saying it, understanding that your taxes pay for everything and thus the government should be in some way representative, that it has some sort of obligation or is in some way in debt to you. That is important as the stimulus for political activity. Just saying I pay your taxes is such a stupid thing to say. And yet, as Jared pointed out, she got to Congress being that kind of dumb person. Now that said, I do want to play the second part of this because the first part of that video, the entire thing was, we shouldn't have an investigation. Okay, then she concludes with this.
So, Mr. Speaker, my questions are this. Who placed the pipe bombs at the RNC and the DNC, which is an attack on both Republicans and Democrats? Why was President Trump's request on January 5th for 10,000 National Guard denied? And who denied it? And what chain of command did they follow? Also, who killed Ashley Babbitt? And why is that not being revealed? Does her family not deserve justice? And lastly, when will the witch hunt of Donald J. Trump come to an end and all of those who support him?
Okay, the grammar at the end was super awkward and self-serving, but she said, we shouldn't have an investigation. We shouldn't have an investigation. We don't need one. I don't want one. I do have some questions though. Who put the pipe bombs there and who killed Ashley Babbitt and why didn't they have security forces there? Trump said he wanted them, but somebody turned it down. We need to get to the bottom of this. Wait, but not with an investigation. No investigation. I have so many burning questions. I need answered. What a dummy.
It's the playbook. It's to ask questions to make the people that are following you that don't know how to think through the full thought process go, yeah, who did plant those bombs? And that's where the thought stops. It stops right there. Who planted those bombs? I don't know, but let me let Donald Trump tell me and maybe Marjorie Taylor Greene tell me. I'm not gonna actually find out the truth. I'm just gonna ask those questions next time someone tells me that the people who we know are responsible need to be held responsible. Then all those questions are, and you talked about this every time we talk about Tucker Carlson, all he does is ask questions to and ignores the answer that isn't very self-serving at the time. So just ask the question and walk away. Oh, so we saw all the Trumpers run up into the Capitol on January 6th. Well, who planted those pipe bombs? See ya, mic drop. Yeah. Kind of the next question I'm gonna ask.
And look, some of those, I would love answers to some of those questions, and I hope that some of the investigations bring it about. But yeah, look, people are pointing out great stuff in the Twitch chat. Like Ashley Babbitt, like, shouldn't she have just complied with what the cops wanted? That's what you're always saying, or is that only for black men? Is that only how that works? White women can do whatever they want, black men have to comply. And the thing is, I wish Ashley Babbitt were still alive. And she easily could have been if people like Donald Trump and Fox News and Marjorie Greene hadn't lied to her and driven her crazy to the extent that she flew across the country to go to the Capitol and to be in that mob and to believe that she was doing some sort of righteous overthrow of the US government. And so she got shot. Okay, I wish none of that had happened. She wishes the last sliver hadn't happened. She has no regrets for everything that got us to that point. Yep. She just wishes she hadn't been shot. Unless she's in her mode where she's saying that it's Antifa, and then I guess she deserved it. But she really goes back and forth, as I said. Look, the thing is, it's like, it's one thing to play videos of her saying stupid stuff, trying to rewrite history about the 6th. But the reason we covered both of these today, and the reason we started with Mitch McConnell and then we went to Crazy Town, is they're the same place. What Trump was saying, what Mitch McConnell is trying to achieve, what Kevin McCarthy is trying to achieve, is the same rewriting of what happened that Marjorie Greene is less expertly, more sort of fumblingly trying to achieve. They're all agreed on this. Tucker Carlson attacking on his show last night, calling the investigation a farce, implying that there's no white supremacists there. It's totally cool. They have different tactics, but it's all the same message. Lying about what happened and trying to get people to believe that an attempt to overthrow the US government isn't a big deal.
That's all they need. That's the whole point. Just to say what happened, what you saw wasn't what you saw.
Yeah. Republicans have been trying really hard to rewrite history about the 6th. Sometimes the receipts have been less than kind to them. So I want to remind you of something that Representative Andrew Clyde, a Republican of Georgia, said just last week about what the 6th actually was.
Let me be clear. There was no insurrection, and to call it an insurrection, in my opinion, is a bold-faced lie. Watching the TV footage of those who entered the Capitol and walked through Statuary Hall showed people in an orderly fashion staying between the stanchions and ropes, taking videos and pictures. You know, if you didn't know the TV footage was a video from January the 6th, you would actually think it was a normal tourist visit.
Okay, so the thing though is, we do have the TV footage, but I understand. TV footage is complicated. It's like lots of frames coming at you every second. So why don't we talk about a few specific frames? So this normal tourist visit, carefully walking in the designated area, not pooping on anything. Well, here's one of those frames. Tom Williams tweeted out, Representative Clyde News reminded me of this. In that photo, you can see one Representative Andrew Clyde barricading a door against the tourists who were walking in a very orderly fashion around. He looked like he really didn't want anything to get through that door. He's putting it up like a werewolf or a pack of zombies are about to come through, which is weird, because it was just Taurus. And then there's this. You want just raw emotion? Take a look at this that Brian Smith tweeted out. That's Andrew Clyde, the person screaming at the far left of this photo. He is hiding behind a man with a gun. His mouth is open in terror at tourists who are just walking around as they are totally allowed to do. Very reasonable. Oh God! Oh God, oh sorry. It was just somebody taking a picture. It was somebody who was buying a hat in the gift shop. Oh my God, I thought it was. Okay, oh no, sorry. They're behind the stanchion. It's okay. Don't worry about it.
Andrew Clyde, apparently, the fact that he read that statement from the whole thing about how it was a tourist attraction, it's just a normal day in the Capitol. He reads the statement. You don't believe in your thoughts enough to even say that without reading it? Like, that was written. That was written. We watch people read statements that are supposed to be organic and real and give us raw emotion and the reality of the situation because I was there. You know what I could do if I was there on January 6th? I could tell you everything I experienced without writing it down in a soundbite that ends with, you would have thought it was a tourist attraction. So if that's the way that you approach it, just because you have to read it and write it down that way, I think it already shows the fakeness behind it. So we don't even have to see these images of him hiding like a baby behind someone with a gun. Was it another Capitol Police officer? Was it Secret Service? You know, kind of like the person who shot the woman that was jumping over the barricades trying to get to the elected officials? Maybe it was that type of person. Oh, but Clyde can hide behind him while he's trying to protect him. But then once they shoot one of the insurrectionists, oh my God, we need justice. They flip on these security personnel and backing the blue. They flip on them so quickly for their own political purposes. It's mind boggling. And I have no idea how they're still even protecting them at this point. Every time, I was saving your life, bro. And you're flipping this, turning around on me now under the table. They need justice for the one guy who shot the one protester who was jumping over and trying to get to Congress people. Bro, you flip reality on its head long enough and people just buy it. I'm not sure how that works, but it's working. Yeah.
You know, I maybe someone in the audience can remind me. There was a congresswoman who, remember when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was like super honest and open about how terrified she had been? Mm-hmm. And then this Republican congresswoman comes out and says, and basically just laughs at her. How could you have possibly been scared? Oh, you're cowering. You're so worried. And then like we showed you on the show like 2 months ago, she had talked in an interview about like, thank God I had my gun. And thank God a strong man like Dan Crenshaw was protecting me. It was Nancy Mace. Thank you, progressive. Yes, Nancy Mace, who at the time I thought, well, she's telling the best sorts of lies. So she's going somewhere. She hasn't really had, I haven't seen much out of her in a while, but maybe someday. So like when AOC is scared, it's, oh, this little lib girl, she's terrified. But when she wants to make her victim of herself, she was the one saying, thank God I was packing heat and I had Dan Crenshaw, last action hero to protect me. Yeah, it's all lies. And like there's a lot that's gone on in the time that we've been covering news and the story that like has really driven me insane. But the lies that they can just tell about this, like, it was Taurus, it was nothing. Everybody knows exactly, we all saw it. But they can say those crazy things and it doesn't hurt them at all. And that fundamentally doesn't feel right in any way. The physical laws of the universe should strike out at that. Like, you know how like we superstitiously believe that God would hit you with a lightning bolt if you told certain lies? Mm-hmm. I don't believe in that part, but like something should happen. A micro black hole or something should, you know, occupy the same point of space as your temporal lobe. Something should happen when you tell these obvious lies.
That's just thing. You can push that to folks that will believe and then believe that, and then have to worry about making sure they're honest and you know, do and say the right things. But folks in power, I mean, honesty, following the law, following the rules, truthful, are you kidding me? None of that applies to them because they're above it now. That's for those rest of those folks who want to aspire to be as godlike as we are. You know, we can break God's rules, you guys can't. So we can lie and you can't.
Someone, Mike Gonzalez mentioned spontaneous combustion. Someone says pants on fire. All pants should be rigged to ignite when you tell a lie like this. Unfortunately, we're not quite there yet. Come on, Bill Gates, get those microchips in our genes. Joe Biden has faced a great deal of pressure for his absolutely awful, I was gonna say leadership, but just complete lack of leadership when it comes to what's going on between Israel and Palestine. He's effectively happy to just sit back and say, well, I'd prefer if there were no civilian casualties. And oh, by the way, here are the missiles you wanted. But anyway, things are changing and it's up to us to decide if they're changing substantively or if as a response of the pressure, they're just doing a little bit better PR. Because you might have noticed, like I noticed this morning, many headlines like Biden increases pressure on Israel for a ceasefire, calling for a significant de-escalation today. And there's many of them, even like insiders saying Biden has grown increasingly harsh in his private comments to Benjamin Netanyahu. All of this very convenient if you've been criticized for seemingly having no problem with civilian casualties. Well, it goes farther. Most recent White House statement says the two leaders had a detailed discussion on the state of events in Gaza, Israel's progress in degrading the capabilities of Hamas and other terrorist elements, and ongoing diplomatic efforts by regional governments and the United States. The readout added that Biden conveyed to Netanyahu that he, quote, expected a significant de-escalation today on the path to a ceasefire. So,
what does that mean?
Iron Man's back in action. Anyway,
what does that mean?
I guess. Please. Please, sir, can I have a little bit less more missiles?
So Joe Biden is laying down first. So it could be read either way, depending on where you feel about it. He's laying down the iron fist and he's finally drawn a line in the sand and he talked to Netanyahu and said, you're going to begin this de-escalation. It's going to lead to a ceasefire at some point. It's some point in the future. I don't know when, but the way it's also read is today. He told him it has to begin today. So what are the numbers? What's the significance of this de-escalation? What qualifies as a de-escalation? What, one fewer rocket that's getting sent over? One fewer a bomb that's getting dropped in the airstrikes? What's a de-escalation? Because anything that's less than what you did yesterday is a de-escalation, right? But you know, so if you kill, I don't know, maybe after you kill, I don't know if the child count is at 60, 70. So if we break it down and we don't hit the same rate, maybe you're killing 12 to 15 kids a day. Oh, we've cut it down to killing 7 to 8 kids a day. De-escalation, we're on our way to a ceasefire. What does that mean? What does that mean?
I don't know. And well, Biden hasn't put out any sort of statement to the US saying, here are our specific expectations. It's just a reference to something he supposedly said. And so, because we can't read Biden's mind and he's not directly communicating with us, we have to see what the effect of this increased pressure is. Well, let's see. Here is something that Benjamin Netanyahu told ambassadors at a military base in Tel Aviv. There are only two ways that you can deal with them, with Hamas. You can either conquer them, and that's always an open possibility, or you can deter them. And we are engaged right now in forceful deterrence, but I have to say we don't rule out anything. What he is saying is they are not ruling out reoccupying Gaza. That would not be, I think it's fair to say, a significant de-escalation to once again occupy every inch. Now, look, the current situation obviously was absolutely horrendous, but at least I guess it wasn't occupation. We might be moving back in that direction. And also, we have some breaking news, because now that all that news has said, the stories have come out about Biden, significant new pressure. Netanyahu says he's, quote, determined to continue Gaza operation after President Joe Biden urged a significant de-escalation. So, damn, Biden really tried hard and I guess just didn't work. I guess it's just not, you know, because he's not doing anything. He's just saying, I'd love it if you do less of the thing that you totally want to do and are facing no consequences for. You could perhaps say, I want a significant de-escalation. Here is what that looks like. And if you don't, those JDAMs you want, gone. You're not getting those. And in fact, the $4 billion a year in military aid, maybe we could put that into increased food stamps domestically. Maybe we could put that towards fighting the climate crisis or something. There's certainly a lot of things we'd love to put some money into. That's actual pressure. That's actual leverage. But notably, there's no references to anything like that in the White House statement.
Well, the thing is also, if there's something to compare it with. So we can talk about how strong and powerful this statement is in this phone call that Joe Biden had with Benjamin Netanyahu. But we've seen our country with, who cares who's leading it, Democrats or Republicans? We've seen them come out and put sanctions on people and countries, particularly when they're doing something that we want them to stop doing. We have a history of being able to address these issues directly and forcefully in a way that would deter them from doing it. We're not, every time you have a conversation, okay, Donald Trump was in office and he vowed to make sure that Iran stopped their nuclear program, that somehow this nuclear deal that Obama garnered with them is a disaster. So he stripped it all completely clean. He shut it all down and in fact set up a way for Iran to actually begin to enrich their uranium again, right? They did that because there's a way that you can do it to actually punish a country. In that case, I think they did a bad job because that was completely against our interests. So imagine if in that case, instead of him actually stripping away all these things and making it harder for them to do things, he went, I had a conversation with Iran and I told them, yeah, I hope that you would eventually get to a point where you can do the things that we'd like for you to do. And then he comes back and dusts his hands and goes into a MAGA crowd and says, I told them to stop it. you think everyone would go, yeah, Donald Trump is so, no, they would go, what does that mean? Yeah. You didn't do anything to Iran. So we exactly. do the same thing with Israel and say, hey, you know, you guys maybe want to stop and calm down a little bit, maybe potentially at some point get to a de-escalation point, then eventually that'll get to a ceasefire, I don't know. And that's supposed to be seen as strong and powerful and laying his, putting his foot down? Come on, man.
I don't know.
We've seen it.
It is a carefully constructed PR effort to do the absolute bare minimum to rebut a little bit of what they see as maybe hurting him a little bit, that it looks like he doesn't care about kids dying. And it substantively is exactly the same thing, but it looks a little bit better. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is apparently going to be introducing a resolution today that would block the United States' planned $735 million sale of bombs to Israel, according to an early draft of legislation which was acquired by Jewish Currents. That resolution would halt the planned transfer of so-called JDAMs, or Joint Direct Attack Munitions, and of small diameter bombs, both of which are bombs outfitted with special guidance systems to hit their intended targets. They're made, by the way, by Boeing, which I had either not known or forgotten, so bear that in mind when these deals are being considered. Both of those JDAMs and small diameter bombs have been used in the current attack on Gaza. We can't say for sure if they're particular ones that were produced previously in the US, although it seems incredibly likely that that is the case. And the next round that will be fired, and in the next conflict that will be fired at Gaza, will likely also be US provided. So we are directly implicated in all of this, but hopefully not, if she's successful in stopping it. AOC says at a time when so many, including our president, support a ceasefire, and she's being so charitable to him there with that, we should not be sending direct attack weaponry to Prime Minister Netanyahu to prolong this violence. It is long past time to end the US policy of unconditional military arms sales, particularly to governments that have violated human rights. So she's put this out here. The issue is that right now, there's effectively only 15 days after when the deal was initially talked about by Biden, when it was initially introduced, to actually stop it, which means that the House has until May 20th to consider the resolution. Well, today I'm looking at it, it's the 19th, so there's not much time. But there is one potential solution, JR, and that is that if a senator introduced a resolution before the end of tomorrow, the bill would be required to get a vote in the Senate. So what we need is one senator. All we need is one senator who's right on this issue and willing to potentially get attacked a bunch for talking about stopping these arms sales. Just one. Can we get one senator, JR?
Oh, well, I mean, I guess we can have a, I don't know, not bingo, but at least some kind of gambling where we get a chance to choose. Who do you think might be potentially the one senator that can step forward and do something like this? I don't know. Who you got your money on, John? Or is your money on no one? That's where my money's gonna be. My money's on no one.
Your money's on no one. So look, I am, I think, a realist, as much as someone who has been driven increasingly insane over the last year and a half can be. I understand that if one Bernard Sanders did come and do this, the result would be it overwhelmingly getting voted down, and that would be really depressing. We'll do a story about it. We'll hate ourselves and our country. That'll be fun. But that is at least something we could at least try. Bernie, like, as we have talked about, Bernie has evolved in this area. He's always been more willing than most Democrats to criticize Israeli military policy vis-a-vis the Palestinians. He has become increasingly so over the last few years. The question is still open, how much so? Would he be the standout one senator who would do this in the Senate? I don't know, but he really needs to be. And maybe we can be a part of that solution. You know, when the minimum wage situation was being talked about, TYT started a pressure campaign to get Bernie to do the right thing. Maybe we should start tweeting at Bernie Sanders. Maybe we should start calling. Like, there's a lot of people watching this right now. I'm seeing, let's see, we got 6,300, about 500 more on Twitch. Other people will be watching this clip later on. Imagine if 1 in 10 of you called in to Bernie Sanders' office and asked why he isn't supporting AOC in this matter. I think that could really have an effect.
I mean, we'll see. I don't know, because the outcry and the voices that are coming forward about what's been happening has done this much so far, right? There's been more attention put on this. There was more pressure from people that usually would just be able to stay silent on this, specifically Joe Biden. We saw how, you know, Rashida Tlaib approached him. And I think that's maybe part of it too, because it looked like, okay, by the way, the whole thing about how Biden wants a ceasefire, I can buy that he wants a ceasefire because it looks really bad for him. But doesn't mean he wants to do the things that will force a ceasefire, yeah, you know, or will force Israel to stop. He just hopes they kind of stop. Four phone calls. Like, please, hey, this time, this is looking really bad. I mean, I know in the past we could just say something, everyone would just believe it, but now we got too much information that's flowing through so many different channels from people that are there. So how do we do this? That's I feel like that's where they're trying to work right now. Quiet back channels to get Israel to stop without actually publicly coming out against what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be like, I want my dog to stop begging for food. Stop begging. Okay, you can have a little bit. Okay, could you really stop? Okay, you're really cute. That's really adorable. Here, you can have some more. I really want this to stop. I don't know what leverage I have. That is basically what's going on here. Withhold the treats. Hashtag withhold the treats.
There's the anyway, hashtag.
I really hope that that is not the hashtag, actually. But anyway, okay, we never know. We're live, unscripted, no teleprompters. You never know where it's gonna go. You know it's gonna be a good time when Representative Katie Porter takes out her whiteboard. She loves visuals and she uses them so well. In this case, to fundamentally dismantle AbbVie CEO Richard Gonzalez about the rapidly rising price of certain pharmaceutical drugs. So they say that they have to raise the price because it's expensive to make these. R&D, research and development, is so expensive, they put so much money into it that they have to raise the price. But is that actually the reason? Well, here is Representative Katie Porter.
Mr. Gonzalez, how much did you spend, did AbbVie spend on litigation and settlements from 2013 to 2018?
I don't have that number offhand. We'll be happy to give it to you.
Okay, $1.6 billion, $2.45 billion on R&D, $1.6 billion in litigation and settlements. What about marketing and advertising? How much does AbbVie spend on that?
Well, marketing and advertising, we spend about $4 billion a year.
Yep, $4.7, $1 billion. How about executive compensation, 2013 to 2018?
2013 to 2018, it's probably on average about $60 million a year.
Try 334 on Versailles. Now, how much did AbbVie spend on stock buybacks and shareholders, stock buybacks and dividends to enrich your shareholders from 2013 to 2018?
Well, stock buybacks, if you actually look at just pure stock buybacks, it would be about $13 billion.
Stock buybacks and dividends is the question, sir.
Dividends, and I have to come back with a number for that over that period of time.
$50 billion.
I think we're gonna need a bigger whiteboard. JR, every time they'd cut to his face, he's just staring, and I hear his inner monologue. It's, oh, fudge. Only he wasn't thinking fudge. As soon as she took out the whiteboard, he must have thought, can I pretend my connection's bad? Can I cut this thing off?
In reality, the only thing he needs to cut is that horrible hair. Anyways, we'll get to other things. How can you be a multi-billionaire, potentially billionaire in this guy's case, and look like that? Sorry, that's my last one. But
JR.
Sorry, I mean, just, we're gonna play one more clip of her.
Describes his only off. Burns. It's rough.
we're gonna get to the rest of Katie Porter in Mortal Kombat style finishing him. So you'll get a chance to look at what I'm talking about. But every time, like you said, there's this silence, and he's like, should I tell the truth? Because I know she has the answer, or should I say something else so that maybe people won't pay attention to what she says next? It's a whole thought process. It's not about, oh, do I know or do I not know? Because trust me, rich people know exactly how much money they have. Mm-hmm. They know exactly how much money they have.
Continue.
It just turned into just trying to figure out, okay, I'm gonna look bad. How do I approach this? It definitely had nothing to do with telling the truth or actually trying to have some kind of accountability or back up your previous statements about what you need to do with research and development. Hell no.
Yeah. So there are two tools that they will generally use, at least in this sort of situation. So one is, oh, I'm sorry, I don't have that number. We'll have to get back to you, knowing that most representatives are as lazy as I was in high school and they're not gonna look into it. But she already has it and he knows it. Like when he says I don't have the number, he's like, you're gonna take out a colored construction paper, aren't you? I know it. You've already got them. Just do your thing. Damn. The other tool that they use is he knows this video is gonna be clipped out, the tool you're supposed to use, you big dumb, time to sort of mess it up. But he can't do that because he's too depressed. Like, he's being owned. So he's just like, I guess I three billion. I don't know. Why did I sign on to this? Now, as JR alluded to, she does have a conclusion. She has a point to this. It's not just about the numbers. It's about the lie and what the lie has so far allowed for them. So here is Katie Porter's conclusion.
So Mr. Gonzalez, you're spending all this money to make sure you make money rather than spending money to invest in, develop drugs and help patients with affordable life-saving drugs. You lie to patients when you charge them twice as much for an unimproved drug, and then you lie to policymakers when you tell us that R&D justifies those price increases. The big pharma fairy tale is one of groundbreaking R&D that justifies astronomical prices. But the pharma reality is that you spend most of your company's money making money for yourself and your shareholders. And the fact that you're not honest about this with patients and with policymakers, that you're feeding us lies, that we must pay astronomical prices to get innovative treatments is false.
She's 100% right. It's totally true. They know how the system works. They know how to game it. They know what is far more likely to not only make money in the short term for their shareholders, but to artificially inflate what will be their compensation. Sure, you could put the money to trying to develop drugs, but you could also just take the money that you've gotten from the massive corporate tax cuts and just buy back the stock to make it seem more valuable than it actually is. And that's what they've been doing. And they, so far, with the law, can do that. Republican president gets in, they cut their taxes, they do the stock buybacks. We see it every single time. But if they're going to be doing that, then we need to see through the lie about why these drugs, whether it's for Crohn's or for whatever, autoimmune and gastrointestinal illnesses, or when they jack up the price of things like insulin, we can do something about this. Other countries do. We don't need to be bought in by the lie, but unfortunately, that's the way that it works. A lot of representatives get money from people like that guy to allow them to do whatever they want. And if it means that people go bankrupt just trying to buy insulin every month, then that's okay by them.
I'm glad you brought up how it connects to Congress people, because that was exactly my point. So this is emblematic of how the reason why, you know, Congress just doesn't work well. People just generally don't like it, but they don't even know why they generally don't like it. It's because they don't get anything done. But look at this. There was this whole debate and question and answer section with this CEO to come in and talk about what his company's doing and their R&D and all that stuff. And Katie Porter, as a part of her point making towards him, dismantles him. Gives all the facts, talks about what they're really doing and where the money's actually going. Why would she do that, right? The whole point is to then present your case. And then if you have honest actors that are in the same session with you, they would go, man, that is what they're doing. Maybe we should change course. Instead, these people get exposed over and over and over again by people like Katie Porter with whiteboards and truth. And then afterwards, everyone goes, look at how she kicked him all around the hearing, and he's in a bad spot. He's sweating like we're doing right now. And then what happens next Wednesday? We never hear about it again. Policy doesn't change. This guy continues to do what he does. They continue to say the R&D is what they need to raise prices for. And we forget the fact that we just saw for the 18th time that they get exposed for what they're not doing the way they said they're doing. What changes? Nothing. He looks bad and we move on. That's all that happens. Because in reality, after someone picks apart someone who's been lying and stealing money from the American government and all of us, the point is supposed to change course right after that. Why wouldn't we change course? Because everyone who would normally be enlightened by this are like, yeah, he paid me. I'm not voting against changing anything like this. I'm not voting for changing anything like this. Why would I do that? They know how this works. This isn't a news story to them. It's only a news story to Americans who are then supposed to put pressure on them to change course. But we don't do that either. Or the ones that do, it doesn't matter, because who really listens to American people?
I think you're almost certainly right. And certainly historically, you are 100% right. I am hoping that every time we do something like this, we remind people of how it works. As you said, that this is about how our politicians get bought off. And that we remind people that this is not just Republicans that get bought in this way from donations from people like that CEO. And hopefully, eventually, we will have less of those people. So the Katie Porter might stand out in terms of, you know, her viral videos, but she won't stand out in terms of what she'll vote for and what she won't vote for. We need a lot more Katie Porters on this particular issue. I know, you know, I don't agree with Katie Porter on literally everything. People are pointing out things in the chat and everything. But we do need more like her that are willing to question these CEOs and potentially change the law if necessary. If they're not gonna do the right thing, well, we've got a government for a reason. I don't vote for CEOs. Mm-hmm. I vote for the government to regulate the CEOs.
And why are they not doing it? Exactly. I mean, if you're an honest politician, which there's no such thing apparently, you hear that and you go, I was on the wrong side of this. I would vote the other way. That's the way debate is supposed to be, right? After a glaringly obvious case of one way has been presented, you're supposed to go, I have no recourse to go back the wrong way because I'm here to represent the American people. If you don't go that way after you see the truth, you are not there to represent the American people, period.
I want to take you back a couple of years to Michael Cohen's testimony to Congress and a very interesting interaction happened between him and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez about some potential criminal acts. Let's take a look at this.
Your conversation with my colleague from Missouri about asset inflation. To your knowledge, did the president ever provide inflated assets to an insurance company?
Yes.
Who else knows that the president did this?
Alan Weisselberg, Ron Lieberman, and Matthew Calamari.
And where would the committee find more information on this? Do you think we need to review his financial statements and his tax returns in order to compare them?
Yes, and you'd find it at the Trump Org.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you, actually, because what she is pointing out there is an area where Donald Trump and probably a lot of other wealthy people have basically gotten away with murder by inflating the value of their assets when necessary to get some sort of benefit, deflating it to get a benefit at a different time. In New York, sure, that's what she's talking about there, but in properties like Mar-a-Lago as well. And so, you know, it's easy to get distracted by Michael Cohen talking about Joey Spumoni and stuff like that. But he is pointing out there is an investigation. I'm Italian, I can say it if I want. Anyway, Joey Cannoli does have the information. And if investigators go to his office and talk to him, you can potentially find it. And whether because of this video or not, that has been happening. And the news last night was the New York Attorney General's office said Tuesday night it had informed the Trump Organization that its investigation into the company, quote, is no longer purely civil in nature. I don't think from Trump's point of view it was ever civil. And is now also a criminal one. The Attorney General's office is working with the Manhattan DA's office, whose wide sweeping probe into the Trump Organization has looked into whether the company misled lenders and insurance companies about the value of properties and whether it paid the appropriate taxes. So now New York Attorney General Letitia James can do stuff like seeking criminal penalties as part of the probe. This is obviously elevating the level of legal jeopardy that they're in at this point. So we have more, but JR, what do you think?
Yeah, I guess people were kind of hoping it'd get to this point or expecting it to, because it's pretty obvious that it could have after some of the things we have heard. So imagine if you're actually investigating and you're actually seeing the receipts, you're actually finding out things, and maybe this will allow them to get a chance to subpoena certain people that maybe they couldn't with civil probes. I don't know. I'm not Adrian Lawrence. I'll ask her later. I really do ask her questions a lot. But at least there's something that takes us to the next stage of what then it can be done. And by the way, it looks like it's gonna get drawn out a bit. So we just got reminded that they're still on this. This is one of those things that happened right after he was out and we're like, oh, they're totally gonna get him now. Bro, it's been several months. Who knows how much longer this could take, especially when you've added this element to what they can look into and then talking to people and investigating that and really trying to make an airtight case. I worry we're gonna get to like midterm time and this really hasn't been wrapped up yet. And then that's gonna be the reasoning that they're gonna give for, look at them going after Donald Trump just because it's the midterms. Bro, this has been going on for quite a while. That's the only thing I worry is that I want the timing just to be a little sooner, but that's just my selfish intentions and I have no idea how these types of probes may work. And you know, they gotta be airtight with it.
Yeah, yeah, and by the way, I've said very often, I don't think anything's gonna come of almost any of this. That said, if anything is going to come of it, this is the investigation that seems most likely because they definitely did it. And not just Trump. And maybe you think it's unfair to focus on Trump when probably basically everyone who owns real estate and that is incredibly wealthy is doing the same thing. Well, sure, but then let's have a bill. Let's have a whole new section of the DOJ that specifically looks into this sort of insurance fraud and other stuff. And this, they're talking about a couple of specific instances of this generally having to do with the Trump Organization in New York. But do you remember the story back in 2016 of the insurance payment that Trump got for hurricane damage to Mar-a-Lago? $17 million. And like everyone was like, there wasn't any damage. There wasn't really a hurricane. It didn't do anything. But nothing came of that. I don't understand how these stories just, they pop up and then we move on. I remember AOC, I don't remember who she was talking to, but she questioned someone about this particular story. I know that there's a lot. It's easy to like lose the trail on a few of these stories, but something has to stick. We can't just let them break the law constantly. Although I guess maybe we can. Maybe we can. They are.
Well, the thing is, yeah, or maybe we choose to. Just anything about inflating and cheating on your financial statements. Imagine just going to buy a car. Imagine trying to buy a $25,000 car, you know, and then you have to fill out your paperwork and understand how much money you make so they can see if you can handle the loan, all those good reasons. And you're actually making, you know, $40,000 a year, and you inflate it to 80. Because if they see $80,000 on your income, they go, oh, this guy can handle this $25,000 car payment, right?
Yeah.
But then they'll find out. Because they check and they need to make sure you give proof immediately. Is that an infringement on your rights? Is that bad that they have to find out if you qualify for the loan? No, but if you're uber wealthy, you can lie about that stuff to make sure you cheat on taxes and cheat on how much money you're getting and all these types of things. But somehow that's something that just can't be checked out previous to that. But if you're trying to get yourself a $25,000 Ford Focus, there's gonna be a big problem with you making sure you're not lying about how much money you make. You, random guy in Nebraska. Why do I always say Nebraska? Works. I have no idea why Nebraska, but Nebraska is the one I go with.
You got some sort of beef there. You need to take a trip to Nebraska, see what it's like. Anyway, that is all the time that we have for this edition of JR's Candies here at the TYT Network. But thank you everybody for joining us. Thank you, JR, as always. I have but one more request for you. Is there any chance that Sprocket's around?
Sprocket was around, let's see. He hears everything. Let's see if this works.
Sprocket during my vacation.
Also, as we wait for Sprocket to determine if he's whether or not going to come in here, I am going to go investigate this Fruit Loop Pop Tarts phenomenon because I can't say I fully believe it. It's probably only available in like Nebraska, but I want to make sure that it's hit the West Coast. And I'm going to have it with my Cinnamon Toast Crunch coffee creamer that I had this morning
with my God.
You're gonna die. Bro, these are not foods. The Pop Tart King. And you're gonna tell me I'm gonna die. Come here, bro. I can lay down.
That creamer seems worse in some way. I don't juice the Pop Tarts. Anyway, Sprocket!
There he is, brother.
The Sprocket Dragon.
He was next to me earlier and I accidentally touched his head and he looked up like, so you're just gonna tease me like that?
He's always like, so happy just to be held, just to be involved.
And he looks up and goes.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I might ask to borrow him for a day during my vacation just to have him around. But anyway, Jarrett, thank you as always.
As usual. See you guys. Have fun.
It shouldn't have taken the events on January 6th for us to be reminded of the fact that we've got a major domestic extremism problem in the US, but it was at least an opportunity for some in the US government to start to take it seriously once again. But in their efforts to combat it, they might be moving in the wrong direction. And we're very lucky to be joined on the program right now by a reporter who's gonna break down one of those directions. This is reporter for The Intercept, as always, Ken Klippenstein. How's it going, Ken?
It's going good. Good to be with you again, John.
We're glad to have you here. I very much enjoyed your recent article about this effort that the Pentagon is putting together to combat domestic extremism, but it looks like there's a few issues with it, right?
Yeah, so the problem is they're working very quietly to bring on consultants to work with, and I was leaked from a source in the Defense Department. Some of these names that they're considering bringing on haven't yet formally brought on, although some of them it looks like are already in some kind of consulting relationship, but this included, neocon groups, anti-Muslim groups, very pro-Israel groups. And, you know, when you think about the response to domestic extremism that I would imagine the public, has some sympathy for, you probably are thinking of, responding to white supremacists, responding to, far right extremists of a very different sort than what this list of experts, so-called, that they're considering bringing on would suggest they're looking at.
And you've got a great breakdown of one of these groups. Before we move to those, though, some of the names are the sorts of groups that you would expect, right? Groups that profile and track hate groups and that sort of thing.
Right, and they have experts from the ACLU as well, which isn't necessarily bad. And what I want to get across in this story it's not that I'm against taking seriously domestic extremism. I think that's wise to do so. And, you know, I quote a former FBI agent who himself, you know, as part of his job, infiltrated white supremacist groups and knows a lot about this and cares about this program. The concern is that when you bring in the crazies, as, you know, it seems like they're considering doing, that could undermine the mission, you know, that I described a moment ago and could hurt the whole program. So anyone who cares about responding rationally to domestic extremism should care when they're, you know, considering bringing on folks that are going to undermine that goal.
So let's talk about one of these groups, the acronym MEMRI. What are they all about?
Yeah, so they were established by a former Israeli intelligence officer that today is a advisor to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And kind of what they do is they translate, you know, Arabic stories into English, but there's a and you know, that sounds all right in itself, but as a report by the Center for American Progress a number of years ago found, there tends to be cherry picking in terms of the kind of stories that they end up translating. And that ended up playing a very central role in the run up to the invasion of Iraq after 9/11 and stoking a lot of this fear, you know, translating these stories, in some cases having mistranslations to suggest, you know, the Muslim extremists are coming, they're going to get you, and we've got to rally behind the military to protect us, that kind of thing. And so, yeah, when you look at expertise like that, you can imagine how this is going to be applied when they have to come up with a, you know, list of keywords and indicators and things on social media to tell us, oh, what's going on with extremism here? I mean, you give them to these kind of groups, you can imagine what kind of keywords you're going to come up with.
Yeah, particularly if the issue is sort of selectively choosing things that will make a group look bad, giving you a fundamentally false idea of the, like, the breadth of the discourse, and then also selectively mistranslating to make it seem as bad and extreme as possible. Yeah, I can totally understand why you'd be a little bit concerned about them being involved, and especially because, like, while this group is going to be looking into extremism, and our concerns are where exactly they're going to be pointing fingers, who they're going to be looking at, like, nationally, you have this attempt to conflate the clear threat of white supremacists, the KKK, neo-Nazis, things like that, with BLM or Antifa or just whatever, just implying that particular groups of white supremacists are Antifa. So, like, there's all this misinformation outside of this working group. You would imagine we'd want the best experts inside of the group to counter that. And so far, it looks like we don't know for sure if that's going to happen. But I'm curious, do we have any idea of the timeline for them choosing these groups?
It's going ahead pretty quickly, at least in the Defense Department. And there are different programs going on in different agencies. You know, DHS has its own attempt to try to respond to this. The Department of Justice has their own. But in the case of the Pentagon, they have a counter-extremist working group. And according to my understanding, they're going to be putting this stuff out, you know, very imminently. I'm thinking the next, by the end of summer. So you know, very soon they're going to be making these sorts of decisions. And I think that's why, you know, people have the, as much as I'd like to take credit and say, oh, I'm a great reporter, I develop all these sources, at least a large part of it is that, you know, people use me as a dissent channel because folks inside are concerned about the direction that at least parts of this are going. You know, that's not to say that the entire response to domestic extremism is bad, but this particular part of it, you know, this is not being pursued rationally.
Exactly. And your article, which is available on The Intercept, everyone should check it out because the details of MEMRI are crazy and some of the individuals involved in it, came out about a week ago. Has there been any acknowledgement or response from the Pentagon or anyone involved in this effort?
They've been under a lot of pressure. Just yesterday, they were being grilled, the Pentagon press secretary, by the press corps. And to their credit, they did a pretty good job of it, asking about a subsequent story related to this one that I just had come out, where they're going to try to use an algorithm to detect, based on keywords, extremist activity, and try to anticipate, you know, what might happen. I don't know exactly how they're going to execute that. I have some information about it, but this just sounds like standard Pentagon graft, where they give a bunch of money to some guy that says, oh, I've got a crystal ball that's going to be able to, you know, do pre-crime reports to find out what's going to, I mean, it's like a Philip Dick novel. And it's not a criticism of how they're executing the social media algorithm. It's a criticism of the notion that you can't predict anything based on just people's tweets. It's ridiculous, you know? And so they're going down this road, and there are a lot of folks that are concerned about, again, not just the threats to speech and that kind of thing. But what this might do to the broader project, which as we're talking about before, they do have sensible people coming on, and there are sensible things they can do. And it's not the entire program that's ridiculous. This is going to be used to smear that broader push, which I think makes sense. Mm-hmm. There is an extremist problem in the country generally. Certainly, there are racists in the military. I don't dispute that. That's important, and this draws away from that.
Yeah. This is moving a bit outside of the so far the reporting that you've done, but I'm curious. I know that a lot was made of the fact that I don't know if it was specifically inside of the FBI or the Pentagon. I think it might have been the FBI. The groups that were specifically looking into white supremacists and domestic extremists back under Obama that the right wing went crazy about, and so they shut down some of these offices. Do we have any idea of the overlap or differences in function and mission between the groups that had been shut down and what's been spooled up right now? Like, is this intended to replace those earlier groups?
Well, in the case of Department of Homeland Security, they actually had a domestic extremism division that President Trump shut down almost immediately. I believe it was in 2017. And these guys focus on white supremacists and groups like that. Biden has reopened that. It's sort of a nuanced picture. He's done stuff that, is sensible. What I'm covering here is something I think he's going off in the wrong direction, because I care that these things be executed properly. And a lot of the problem is just being done in secrecy. When I talked to Congress, the House Armed Services Committee, they didn't seem to realize that any of this stuff was happening. So they're doing this all in secret. There's probably going to be large contracts. I know there's going to be large contracts, or at least that's the plan, going out to these firms to produce this software to try to anticipate these crimes. Presumably to these consultants that they're considering working with. So if Congress isn't being read into that, and it's going to come out eventually, that's probably not good that the public isn't have some sort of input in how this is being executed. Yeah. And so it's the fact that it's happening in the shadows that I think is probably the biggest problem here. Because when you put it out in the open, people say, left and right have been getting response to this article. Yeah, this is ridiculous. This is a dumb idea. Let's not do it this way. Let's do something about it, but let's not do it this way.
Exactly. Well, hopefully continued coverage of your work will continue to put pressure on them and they'll go in the right direction. But if anyone watching this would like more details about this work or the follow-up work that Ken was referencing, it's available at The Intercept. And as always, Ken, we appreciate your work and you coming to join us.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.